politely request now then that you give your attention to our speaker who will consider the subject this afternoon, Coming Troubles and the Second Advent.
And so the subject then is Coming Troubles and the Second Advent. Actually, if you look at next week's subject, it's Signs and Times or Evidence that the End is Near. So whereas that will probably go into all the sort of evidence that the end is near, all the signs of Christ's return, really this talk is really going to focus on coming troubles in a second advent. In other words, what of the overall signs, what are the ones that suggest that the time in which Christ returns is going to be a very troublesome time? And that's really what we'll look at tonight. First of all, I'll point out that the return of Christ is absolutely certain, and it's prophesied in many passages. Here's just a few. You know, in Acts chapter 1, "You men of Galilee, why stand you gazing up into heaven? The same Jesus which is taken up from you into heaven shall so come in like manner as you have seen him go into heaven." So Christ will return again. Another very well-known passage is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. "For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first." So again, another clear, you know, verse that says that Christ will return. There's also several times in Revelation, "Behold, I come quickly, behold, I come as a thief." You know, many, many similar things like that in Revelation. And the very last verses upon which the New Testament ends is, "He which testifieth these things saith, surely I come quickly. Amen, even so come, Lord Jesus." So the last words that the New Testament finishes on is all about Christ returning. And there's also lots of parables about the coming kingdom of Christ. You know, the kingdom of heaven is like unto X, Y, and Z. There's a lot of parables. The parable of the 10 virgins showing that Christ will return after a gap of some time. So there's lots of verses about Christ coming in general. And that's the good news, if you like. But the bad news is that a lot of verses do indicate that for the world at that time, it's going to be a very uncertain and probably quite frightening time in many different ways. So here's just a few passages which we'll look up. If we turn to Matthew chapter 24 and just read a few of the verses there. Verse 3, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumours of wars. See not to be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows." Also, if we turn to Luke in chapter 21. And verses 25-28. "And there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts feeling them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then they shall see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh." So that tells us just the sort of atmosphere that will prevail in the world at the time of Christ's coming. It says men's hearts feeling them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. So things are going to happen that will make grown men, you know, perhaps have heart attacks and be really, really fearful for what's happening. Things that are inevitably going to happen. Also, if we turn just to the chapter which we read in Daniel and chapter 12. So Daniel in chapter 12 and just the first three verses. "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. And just think about what those words mean. There's been many times in the past where there's been really difficult times. You know, the Black Death, for example, was very bad. But these are going to be times that are so bad, they're even worse than anything that's ever gone before. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book of life. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And there's also Isaiah chapter 24, which says that, you know, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard. So there's many verses that talk about just how bad things will be at the time that Christ returns. But I think there's also another whole sequence of prophecies that are often overlooked that describe the time of the end as well, that show, and we'll look at evidence for this, that a financial crash is essentially inevitable. Here's just a few verses, for example, and contrary to what usually happens where there's rich and poor people together, Christ himself said, you know, the poor you will always have with you. In other words, there'll always be rich people as well. At the time of the end, that seems to change potentially quite suddenly. So, for example, in Isaiah chapter 24, it says, "And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury to him." In other words, everyone alike is going to be in the same boat, whether you're someone that takes interest or, you know, somebody who lends money to other people or someone who has lended money. Everyone will be in the same boat. We won't have that same thing where there's, you know, very rich people at the top creaming off money from everyone else. You know, people, creditors and debtors, are going to be in the same boat. Something is going to happen to turn around the normal way that society has operated for thousands of years. In James chapter 5, it says, again, a sign of return, "Your gold and silver is cankered." Now, this can't be talking about literal gold and silver, because they don't rust at all. It says, "And the rust of them shall be a witness against you." So something is going to happen to apparent wealth, that it's going to corrupt or crumble in front of people's eyes. You know, what seems to be gold and silver, what seems to be something that's worthwhile, is going to disappear very quickly. And during the talk, we'll see how that is probably going to unfold. In Isaiah chapter 2, "In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats." You know, people will realise that all these things, that apparent wealth they had, is going to come to naught. In Ezekiel chapter 7, "They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord." And that's an interesting one, because it means that these events that are going to happen are going to be so bad that even rich people won't be able to sort of buy their way out of it. There's going to be problems so severe that just being rich, which would normally be a way to, you know, escape trouble, isn't going to help at all. In fact, you can just cast money away, because money won't solve anything in these last days. In Zephaniah chapter 1, "Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath." And the Laodicean ecclesia, "Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing." Again, it's talking about apparent wealth, apparently being rich, but also that just turning around and being useless. These things can be applied spiritually, that spiritual wealth, but as we'll see during the talk, if you take them also as literal wealth, it becomes very clear why these things are going to be the way they're described there. And so if we just take these things together, all the signs of Christ's returns, or rather not all the signs of Christ's returns, but just the subset around coming trouble, we see that the world is going to have wars and rumours of wars, nations and kingdoms fighting. In Greek, that's actually the word ethnos, which is where we get our word ethnic from. So perhaps ethnic cleansing or ethnic fighting. There's going to be famines. Pestilences are going to be a notable feature of the end times. Earthquakes, as we'll see. A financial collapse, I think, is completely unavoidable. Nothing can be done to avert it. Nobody will escape. Won't matter if you're rich, poor, maid, servant, whatever. Doesn't matter. It's going to be worse than anything that's ever happened before. The earth itself won't be able to cope. you know, the earth reeling to and fro like a drunkard, seems to be that people will actually be dying out of fear and looking after what's happening or what's going to come in the future. In other words, you know, perplexities and no way out. Powers of heaven, whether that's literal or symbolic, it hardly matters. It's going to be extremely bad. And all of this is going to be happening in diverse places. In other words, all over the place. Not just in the Middle East, the usual trouble spot, but everywhere around the whole world. And this is just the beginning of sorrows. It's like a woman giving birth, where, you know, you think there's going to be, or you think there now are really bad pangs, if you like. And you think, oh, it couldn't get any worse. But it does get worse. It gets an awful lot worse. And it continues to get an awful lot worse, from what I understand. But that is the symbol that Scripture itself uses for these things. You know, they seem to be really bad, and it seems to not be able to get any worse. And yet it just systematically gets worse and worse. You might think that all these things, well, all I'm doing is simply taking stuff from the news and, you know, looking at the kind of things that would be easy to fit into today's newspapers. But just to prove that's not the case, and just to prove that these things have been predicted by many Bible students over, you know, long time, here's a quote from Christendom Astray, which an early Christophian writer called Robert Roberts wrote, and this was the 1862 edition, meaning that, you know, early on in the 1800s he was already saying these things, and also early on in the 1800s, you know, those who read the Bible, even though at the time nothing like this was happening, they were looking at what Scripture said. But in that time he said, "Hence, at the first indication of the approach of the end, we must look for times of great trouble and commotion. International politics will become complicated beyond the possibility of unravelment. A universal war spirit will be evoked. Commerce will become embarrassed, trade fettered, employment precarious, distrust will fill society, panic will spread, trade bankruptcies will follow in quick succession, and the social fabric will be shaken to the foundation, if not involved in ruin and reduced to chaos. Events will stride with rapid march, and anon the superhuman will enter the scene." So this is long before today's newspapers, long before all the riots in London and stuff like that, and the financial crisis of 2008. These are the kind of things that Christadelphian writers were saying. So let's go through some of these signs, and let's honestly ask ourselves, is something different in these last days than from what has gone on before? In order to actually find out the facts of the matter, I went on to quite a few of this facts and figures are from Wikipedia, which is an online encyclopedia, just to see whether there actually is something different in these last days compared to all the stuff that's gone on before, because we know there have been many unpleasant things in the past. Here's a table from there, just over a number of decades, taking the number of wars and rumours of wars, and it's got a list of what exactly constitutes a war, you know, how many have to die and so on. But there it gives you an idea of just how bad things have been. In the 30s and 40s, obviously we had tail end of the First World War and start of the Second, so that wasn't much fun living in those times. But that did start to ease off. In the 50s and 60s, things eased off a lot. Then, you know, roughly speaking, 13, 16, 31, 27, that kind of number of international wars. But if you look at the list from 1990 onwards, in that decade, suddenly everything seemed to change. Even though that was actually a boom time, peace, it seemed, you know, the stock market just blossomed in those times, and yet the number of wars doubled from anything really that had gone on before. It was way out of kilter with what had happened before. This decade already, there's been, you know, roughly the same number. In other words, that at least probably doubling of the number of wars has continued in this decade as well. In other words, this is something new. It hasn't really happened that sustained large numbers before. Here is, just to give you an idea of how much actually is being spent in wars, you know, for nation shall rise against nation. Here is the United States military expenditure going back to the 1940s. This is a long, long historical comparison. So is anything actually different nowadays? Bear in mind, this is also inflation adjusted. It's constant dollars. It's not sort of the fact that we're inflating our currency supply dangerously has been taken into account already. So obviously during the Second World War, there's a massive spike in spending, and there's been a few peaks and troughs. But now, as you can see from the graph, we, as a share of the GDP, which is the really frightening bit, this is, you know, the tax take of the government and how much is actually being spent. Spending money in war and armaments and fighting is just on a rise just now. And the evidence, as we'll see, is that it's just going to keep on going up forever and ever. In the Second World War, dramatically things stopped after that because governments eventually run out of money. But the frightening part nowadays is that governments don't run out of money because they can just print a load more. So spending and war and keeping wars being perpetuated is not going to be a thing of the past. It's going to increase, I would suggest, exponentially from now on. There is no limit, whereas in the past people literally ran out of money and could not spend anymore, and so wars came to an end. That's not a feature of modern governments. It's not just the United States. Every country is doing it. Here's China, for example. China has nobody to fight. It literally has no enemies. No one's attacked it for probably thousands of years, really. And yet they're just increasing spending. You know, it's crazy how much is going up. It's just going up every year, just bang, 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 up it goes. They're not using that. They're just making it all. They're not fighting anyone, so you would think they wouldn't need to do that. But if you look at armaments and war spending all around the world, it's all an increase. You know, nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, wars and rumours of wars. There's that verse about, you know, let the weak be strong. This is all about a mindset where people just think fighting, fighting, fighting is the only answer. You can really see what's going to bring people to believe that invading Israel would be some kind of solution to some problem or other. And if you think, oh, you know, surely we've got loads of peacekeepers nowadays, and isn't humanism wonderful, and, you know, peacekeepers are surely going to save the day. Well, far from it. Here's a graph just showing exactly, you know, peacekeeping forces from 1947, which is when all the UN peacekeepers came about, to more or less to today. You know, spending on so-called peacekeepers clearly isn't working. More money is being spent in war than ever before. There's no limit now to how much can be spent in wars. Governments won't run out anymore, and the money being spent in peacekeepers again is just, whoosh, it's just on an upward curve, and it will be like that probably forever. If only they would read Isaiah 48 verse 22, because there is no peace, saith the Lord, unto the wicked. So clearly the evidence does point to there being a specifically increased time of trouble and unrest and stuff like that at the time of the end. Here's another interesting table. This is going to be about earthquakes. Some people say that earthquakes are increasing in these last days. Others say, oh no, that's not happening. Well, let's look at the actual figures. Here is, again, this is actually from the United States Geological Survey, so figures that are official. But if you look at all the different decades from the 70s to now, the size of earthquakes, 8.0, remember this is a logarithmic scale, so ones over 8 are just, you know, many, many, many orders of magnitude more than the usual ones, and so it goes downwards. But I would suggest that something happened in about the 2000s. If you look at that row in bold, I don't think there's evidence that the sheer number of earthquakes in general is increasing, but what is different is that the number of really, really big earthquakes is just, something happened to it in the 2000s, just like the war increased. The number wasn't 6 or 4 or 5 or something like that. It was 13. These are just earthquakes that are, you know, 10 to the power 8 or 10 to the power 9, more than the little ones. And they just suddenly, for some unknown reason, just started to really, really, really escalate. We're only about 18 months into this new decade, so it's hard to really get, you know, comparative figures. But already the number of the really big ones and the number of deaths seems to be in the same way, you know, just going up now, and looks like it will keep on being extremely high. So for example, if the 2000 figures for the whole of this decade were to be extended, it would similarly be around the same as the 2000s. And the number of deaths so far is heading into something like 1.5 million people. So the number of deaths and the number of really, really big earthquakes, these are the ones that just kill, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in within minutes, is just way bigger than it's ever been in the past. It doesn't look like it's increasing steadily, it's just a sudden jump. In other words, earthquakes will become a notable feature of the end days. So the evidence then points to huge, really, really big earthquakes as increasing in number, as suddenly becoming a feature of the end days. These are earthquakes that are just really normally really uncommon, might only happen once or twice a decade, but now they're happening, you know, quite frequently, once a year. And this looks like what you might call a feature of modern life, just as war spending, etc., is a feature. And the deaths look like they're going to just keep on spiraling out of control. So I don't think scriptures necessarily say that earthquakes will become more common, just that earthquakes specifically will be a feature of the last days. And if you look at the fact that these are huge earthquakes, that is borne out. But let's continue that by looking at some other things. Let's look, for example, at just pestilence and disease in general. And just a reminder of what's happened in the past. The Black Death killed between 30 to 60% of Europe's population in about a 2-year period. So that wouldn't be a good thing, really. Or the 1918 Spanish influenza outbreak killed about 50 to 100 million people. And again, in the same kind of time period, a couple of years. But medical people, I've spoken to a lot of doctors about this, they really believe it's only a matter of time before something along those same kind of lines, in other words, an uncontrollable epidemic, or pandemic really, happens again. We've just recently, like in the last 10, 20 years, we've had a whole bunch of sort of new diseases that have never really been encountered before. HIV and AIDS is the obvious one, but there's the Ebola crisis in Africa going back to the 90s, there's been SARS, avian flu, swine flu. These are new strains of new diseases that haven't been seen before. And the number of, as scientists tinker around and try to do stuff with all their knowledge, as the aging barrier gets rolled back and people live longer, other things are being uncovered, such as Alzheimer's disease and dementia. You know, we're not adding, might well be adding years to somebody's life, but we're not adding life to people's years. ADHD, for example, is something that was probably not really known about decades ago. And things like, you know, everyone knows that things like cancer, obesity, diabetes, these are all classed as pandemics, but they've just mushroomed in the last few decades. So disease in general is a new feature, it's something new that's never really happened to this degree before. There's also a sort of increase in traditional diseases of ill health, such as, you know, mumps is on the increase, dengue fever, West Nile virus, cholera, typhoid. These are all things that are making a comeback in many parts of the world. A lot of these are actually becoming resistant to antibiotics. So whereas if you read medical books from, let's say, the 70s, and it's saying things like, you know, with the new set of antibiotics we have nowadays, you know, all these diseases will be a thing of the past. Scientists now are starting to worry that they won't be a thing of the past, and not only will they all make a comeback, but they'll all become resistant to antibiotics. And, you know, medical people really do believe that it's really only a matter of time before all these things start to combine, you know, become resistant to antibiotics, and, you know, something really unpleasant happens. When these viruses combine, that's when a new outbreak happens, and it just takes time for scientists to find a cure. In fact, they might not even find a cure. AIDS still, to this day, no one really knows what to do about it. It's still killing people. And these things have untold consequences. The fact there has been lots of really bad deaths in the past suggests that something similar could happen again. But even if you look at a slightly different angle at just the planet Earth itself, those verses that we read, the earth reeling to and fro like a drunkard, may well be applied symbolically for nations. But if it is literal, here's a graph again from Wikipedia, just showing that something is happening in these last days. It's not just mankind's stupidity, you know, there is more to it. Things like earthquakes and disasters in general are not just on the increase in the last few years, but are just way out of proportion to what normally happens. disasters here includes, you know, drought, earthquake, extreme temperatures, famine, flood, insect infestation, landslides or mudslides, volcanic eruption, you know, wave surges such as tsunamis, wildfires, windstorms, and the number of all those disasters taken together is just, you know, massive. It really is out of all proportion to anything really that has gone on before. Up until about the 60s, things were kind of fairly, not much of a difference really, but recently things have really taken a sort of ugly turn. So taking all these things together, there's wars and rumours of wars, there's increased defence spending, a spirit of unease, pestilence, disease, earthquakes, and, you know, the earth itself seeming to go through extremes of you know, what happens normally in the weather pattern. But just to add to that, let's look at some of the, what I think are 100% inevitable financial problems, which I don't think anything can ever be done to it. I will see shortly evidence for why there could well be a financial collapse of some kind. Added to that, in addition, there's also a demographic time bomb going on, which is happening right now and will inevitably only increase as time goes on. You know, men's hearts feeling for fear for what is coming on the earth. There's also peak oil, as we'll see, and almost inevitably mankind, because of all those things together, is peak domestic output, peak population, and peak food, and just about peak everything else. These are all interrelated. You know, the problems are only compounding on themselves and making every other one worse. And these are all problems that are inevitable. You know, they really can't be solved. Man isn't capable of solving these. Even if we had a sort of brilliant kind of Winston Churchill type politician all over the world, there really are no solutions to any of this, as we'll see. So let's just summarise what the financial systems are actually like. And the real problem is that we would imagine that people would have money in a bank account and they'd kind of spend that money when they wanted to buy something, and you would do something called saving up if you wanted to actually buy something that you couldn't afford. Well, that may well have been how our parents did it. That's not how anyone really does it nowadays, because if you look at the figures, everything and everyone is in debt on a gigantic scale that's almost too frightening to contemplate. Households are deep in debt. I think reading recently, yesterday, the average household debt is something like £50,000. That's not including a mortgage. Could well include student fees and things like that. But £50,000 in debt when your job might only be, or if you have a job, it might only be a few tens of thousand. In addition to a mortgage, households are way in debt. Companies can't survive without credit. They can't survive without going into debt either, which is why when the banks stop lending, they just cease to function half the time. Banks, you would think banks would have all the money. In fact, banks don't have all the money. Banks not only have no money, they have no assets of any description really. They are actually in debt themselves by 40, 50, 60, 80, even 100 to 1. You know, in the Great Depression, banks were typically leveraged 10 to 1, meaning they had 10 times more debt than they had the assets to ever pay off. Whereas banks nowadays, you know, those were the good days, banks are now leveraged up to 100 to 1. And that's only the official figures, because the unofficial figures are probably worse than that. You would think as well, governments would have loads of money and they could sort of take their bank account and pay out, you know, when they needed to. In fact, governments don't have any money either. They're actually in debt. So governments and banks in debt and households in debt, you know, that can only end badly really. So banks, ordinary people and governments are just drowning in debt. And whenever someone or something gets bailed out, all it means is more cash is printed out of nothing and you go further into debt. It's a little bit like having a credit card where there is no limit and no one ever asks you to pay off the balance really, and you control the balance anyway, so you can just simply print off and let that balance go up indefinitely. You have to pay the interest on that, and ultimately that comes back to bite you. And that insane debt level has been going on for decades now. The financial systems work not by having money, which they allocate to people, but simply by going further and further into debt. You know, that's how modern money works. It's a debt that increases exponentially. It's like a giant balloon that inflates, and you simply have to keep inflating it, otherwise everything collapses. It's all a bit like a gigantic pyramid scheme. If you don't believe it, here's an example of various countries. This isn't the worst, these are sort of civilized European type countries. But Greece, for example, these are actually fairly old, in 2009, so the situation is a lot worse than that. But the Greek debt is 112% of its GDP. The GDP is about twice the tax take of a country. In other words, the tax take is, you could think of it as a country's income. But in the case of Greece, for example, its debts are something like, many, many times more than the tax take. So it's like you having an income of 20,000, let's say, £20,000 a year, but owing 50, 60, 70,000 pounds a year. In fact, every year you go further and further into debt. And that's what governments are doing. Greece is like it, Italy's like it. All these kind of good countries that don't overspend like Germany, they're just the same. They're no different to Greece. The figure might be marginally smaller in Germany's case. France has had its credit rating downgraded in the last few days. And these are the so-called, you know, good people who don't overspend. But every country in the world is like it. The United States is just too bad. It would be off the scale. It would be over there somewhere, really. On the other hand, they have more people in our country to pay it off. But these debts are so big that they will never realistically be paid off. Just to put another spin on that graph, up until this is a graph showing how much money existed, and then when we came off, or the world came off the gold standard in 1971, it was actually a lot further back than that, but in 1971 all pretense of ever being linked to gold was finally severed. But since then there's been no limit to how much governments can print off. And you can see what happens at that point onwards. It just exponentially takes off. It's a politician's ultimate dream to have no limit to how much money you can ever print off. Anything you desire to pay the, you know, to give to people when they vote for you, you can have it, because no one's ever asking you to ever pay it back. So this debt is just going up and up and up. It'll never be paid off. The amount of debt you would actually, the amount of income you would need to pay this debt off, is just unbelievably bad. It could never be done. Now, politicians might well say, oh yes, but when we're back to normal again, the economy will be booming and then we'll pay these debts off. Well, here's a graph of what is going to happen, and there's several things to explain why that's going to happen. Simply on maths alone, the interest on a debt becomes compounded and compounded and compounded. So even if they were to balance the budgets from now on for the rest of doomsday, that graph would still happen, because the amount of money compounds from now on. Anyone who's gone to a loan shark or borrowed money and will find that, you know, if you owe £1,000, you don't pay them back, and compound interest builds on itself, and that £1,000 becomes £2,000, then £5,000, then £10,000, and it gets to the stage where the amount of money you owe is out of all proportion to what you borrowed in the first place. You know, simply exponentially compounding interest does that. That's why the Bible says, do not charge interest on debts, because you get into impossible to pay off debt spirals. And even if governments pay their debts now, that graph will inevitably happen. You know, it cannot be avoided. Men's hearts failing them for fear of what's happening. But it's going to get a lot worse, as we'll see shortly. Here's modern finance in a nutshell. You've got the world's income, GDP, or how much of the money government spends. You've got maybe a little bit of assets like gold and silver on top of that. Then you've just got this ocean, just a sheer ocean of garbage credit over and above that. And that creates money that can never, ever, ever be paid. There's no income that can ever pay it off. There's no assets in the whole world. There aren't enough assets ever to pay this off. So this can only, it has to collapse, it has to evaporate, or just keep on expanding and expanding forever. You know, money is literally becoming worthless. Not even worthless all the time, it's becoming worthless. Money is becoming like confetti that you just sprinkle around. Governments don't even have the decency nowadays to even do what the Weimar Republic did, which is print off money that you take a wheelbarrow to buy a loaf of bread. It's all just created electronically nowadays. So the summary of this huge debt problem that's only going to get compounding worse. In the Great Depression, the banks were leveraged 10 to 1. Now they're leveraged up to 100 to 1. Banks have leased more gold than they have. They've sold on paper more gold than even exists. credit derivatives, which are money compounded on money, a bit like what happened when the financial systems crashed, is now 700 trillion. You know, the GDP of the entire planet Earth is only 50 trillion. So more money is owed to other people than even exists in the whole world. Essentially, all Western governments, and probably all governments in fact, are bankrupt, they're insolvent, they can't meet their daily needs. The only way things aren't collapsing is because they're getting further into debt. The United States has been insolvent since 1971, and all banks are really either insolvent or have no real hope. The only way that things are being sellotaped together is just by simply printing more money. So financial ruin is inevitable and unavoidable. It will happen, but it won't happen kind of slowly over the next decade. When it does happen, it'll be like Iceland, Greece, Spain, etc. It'll just happen really fast and probably over a sequence of weeks. So if that weren't enough, there's another major problem coming, which is the baby boomer crisis. And if you look at the graphs, this is the number of people who were born, you know, throughout the last 60, 70 years. And after the Second World War, birth rates suddenly took off. Everyone was happy that the war was over. But for the next 20, 30 years, every year, regular as clockwork, there was just more and more and more babies being born. And if you shift that through in time as to what happens when all those people grow up, in the 60s we had all the, you know, drugs and free love as those people are growing older. In the 80s and 90s they get jobs and they start putting money into pensions and stuff, so pensions started, you know, booming. However, now, you know, 1942, let's say, add 65 years to that, and they now start retiring. So that means that now, as sure as night follows day, all those baby boomers for the next 30 years, they will start retiring. And that's going to be, you know, if we had loads of money to pay for it all, that would be brilliant. We're already in debt. But every single year, more and more people, exponentially compounded every year, plus all the people who were born previously, they will start to retire. And the effect on that is, when you start thinking about what that actually means, it's, you know, frightening. This has been known about for decades. There's been whole books written about it. Politicians and governments, you know, it's not in man that walketh to direct his own steps. Nothing has been done. It'll mean that government debt, for example, were guaranteed to spiral out of control for decades, because you need to fund all those. You need to give them pensions. You know, there's no money being saved up for any of this. Government's already steeped in debt, and then this comes along. That money can only come from future tax, which won't pay for it, or from simply printing out more money. As those pensioners start to take money out of the stock market in order to fund, you know, they don't have any job anymore because they've retired, and so they need to get money from somewhere, and that can only come from cashing out retirement funds, which will mean that as people start to cash out in a wave of people over the next 30 years, that will cause everything to plummet. Also, more health spending on an aging population that's getting things like Alzheimer's, etc. More and more drugs being produced, so more and more expensive. And there's, to make it even worse, is the fact that there's less taxpayers to pay for all of that. Spending in shops will go down because pensioners don't need as much money, they don't have families anymore. And so the economy will slide downward as well. And those people have all been born now, so they will inevitably grow old and retire. And this is guaranteed to happen. It's been known about for many years. But to put that in a graph form, you'll see that up until now, kind of things have more or less balanced out, and roughly the same number of people retiring as coming into the workforce. But now that's all going to change. There'll be less and less people coming into the workforce, and a growing number of people to pay for who are leaving the workforce. And that inevitably means that, you know, debt is going to grow. Spending is going to increase, not just increase a little bit, but increase way beyond what you'd naturally expect. Unless you just simply don't pay for those people. But that isn't really an option, otherwise no one would vote for you if you're a politician. To put it into another graph that makes sense, up until now we've kind of somehow been able to almost balance spending. You know, we are getting into more debt, but kind of almost balancing out things. Whereas now, that debt is only going to compound and compound and compound for at least the next 30 years as those retirees start to retire and have to be paid for somehow. But then, you know, to put it another way, the percentage of how much you have to overspend by to pay for all this stuff is just going to increase and increase and increase. Every country around the world is more or less the same problem, some more or less bad than others, but it's still the same problem. So spending from now on is going to increase, exponentially. It can only do that. But there's another problem that's almost even more worrying than that. Remember that verse about men's hearts failing them for fear for what's coming on the earth. In other words, things are going to happen. Inevitably, people know things are going to get much worse. There's something called peak oil, which is being unbelievably well researched. There's been books written in the 70s about how this would happen, 80s, 90s, even more books. It has to be one of the best research subjects out there. But what peak oil basically states is when, in about the 1850s, when oil was discovered, you kind of put a pin in the ground and oil came shooting out in big geysers. That meant it was very easy to get oil. But the physics of an oil field is that the pressure is really massive, lots of oil comes out, but that pressure goes down and down and down and down until eventually you have to start pumping it out of the ground. You have to apply more energy in than it gets out, and inevitably that given oil field starts to decline every year systematically. After the peak, starts to get less and less oil coming out, and you have to work an awful lot harder to get it. Not that oil is going to run out, because obviously if you're at the peak, you've got just as much after the peak as before. It's more that it's going to get a lot harder and a lot more expensive and a lot more unpredictable to get out. And if you look at, here's just a graph of the actual, so that last graph was the theoretical figure. The actual figure depends on the sum of all different oil fields all over the world. And we now kind of know lots of evidence that we're probably slightly past that peak now. And that means that the effect of what happens from now on is going to mean several things. It'll mean, in fact, I'll just put that last one up. First of all, everything in modern society, and I literally mean everything, is dependent on oil. Cars and planes and ships, everything needs oil to transport it round for fuel, for liquid fuel. Food transportation needs that. Agriculture won't function without oil, because you need diesel for tractors, you need fertilizers, you need plastic to store things, aluminium. Just about everything in modern life that's produced, from plastic to metal, everything needs oil. And if oil starts going down, the amount you're getting every year systematically goes down by, let's say, 5 or 10%, that inevitably means you won't be able to produce as much of that stuff as you used to. So oil prices will start to spike unpredictably. Over the next few years, this will start to dawn on people and governments that it is not exactly running out, but it's becoming a scarce resource and it's becoming unpredictable, and you might not have it one day. So people will start to panic. Inevitably, fuel will be given to the people who really need it, such as police and army. You've got to fight all those wars after all. It also means we've reached the peak of economic output, because without oil, economies then slide downwards. It's almost certainly going to mean the end of mass food production, because the way that something like 1% of the world's land mass produces all the food for the other 99% can't happen unless you've got oil coming in huge amounts and very cheap to produce that food. If it's peak food production, it's peak food, and that means peak population, and it inevitably means a decline or the end of civilization as it's currently lived. Not the end of civilization, just the end of civilization as we currently experience it, where we're, food is plentiful and there's no problem with that and you can travel anywhere you like. And being rich won't solve this, because it will happen to everyone alike. Here's a graph just showing you what actually happens when, that peak happens. There'll be a time when people will deny it's happening. In the next few years, it'll become obvious that peak oil is happening. Will then start to become unemployment and recession, because oil is needed for everything in life, for manufacturing, for everything, for travel, absolutely everything. Probably there'll then be brownouts and blackouts, etc. There'll then be some kind of emergency where government start saying, panic, let's do what we can do about it. And that's when things start to sink in, because you can't do anything about it. It's too late by then. The time to do something about it would have been the 70s or 80s. shortages, rationing, food distribution will start to go haywire, financial markets collapsing, crime, civil disorder. You know, it's just a long, long decline of civilization. And you might think, well, that's not really a problem, because if we just invest in solar and wind and nuclear, that'll all go away. Unfortunately, that isn't the case, because none of solar, wind, anything like that won't help with oil, because we need oil to produce things, and you need oil for ships and planes and cars to fly around. You know, a plane can't fly on solar power, and ships can't fly on wind, at least not unless you go back to sailing ships. So none of that will happen. Even if you had electric cars, that wouldn't solve it either, because there isn't enough electricity in the national grid to do cars. So there's a whole load of signs I've shown there, but just to summarise all of this, everything is converging on now, i.e. the next few years is all of this happening. You know, it's already happening, it's just it's going to get much worse as time goes on. It's peak debt, you know, the debt can only collapse from now on. Peak oil can only become harder to get out of the ground and much more expensive and unpredictable. Peak population means that, you know, there can only ever be famines from now on. The population will not be able to keep increasing like this. Peak GDP, there is inevitably going to be an economic decline from now on. Peak civilization, there's definitely going to be earthquakes, natural disasters and things like that. Famines are going to become inevitable. Pestilence and disease, it's only a matter of time before all these things start to really hit. Extreme weather patterns, you know, society, mankind, from every angle we look at it, is in terminal decline. And there really are no human solutions. If we had really great politicians who could work through this stuff, there really are no answers to this. It's exactly like the verse in Jeremiah, "O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walketh to direct his own steps." So the future does look very bleak and fearful for the world. Now you might be thinking, well, you know, all of this has happened before, we've had famines before, etc. Well, the interesting thing about this, it's all, you know, literally now, in these next few years, it's already in the process of happening and it's going to get worse. We have had famines before, but not all of this together in exactly the right combination of time. Everything waiting until today's generation, these next few years, as being the crunch years. And mankind is still ignoring these problems. Governments know about these problems, they've been researched, but they're choosing to do nothing about them. Because if you try and tackle them, you know, you'll have to take measures and you won't be voted into power the next year. So governments will just simply ignore all this until it's too late. And there will come a time when people start to really wake up. So what we've seen really is that all of these signs, you know, second, the coming of Christ and all these coming troubles, there is inevitably going to be a really unpleasant awakening as people start to waken up, and people really will be genuinely afraid for what's happening. These things can't be solved. You know, food can't be plucked out of thin air, it has to be grown. If you don't have fertilizer and diesel to plough crops, it'll all become very problematic. So should the faithful be afraid? Well, there is that verse we read earlier, "And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh." An important point there is perhaps that these things are all given to us as signs of the end. They're all signs of Christ returning. And that means that when we look up and begin to see these things happen, we know that these aren't something we should panic about and worry too much about, because they do mean that Christ is about to return. It's a bit like seeing signs of summer, that once you know the signs of summer are there, once you've got your eyes open, once you can read the newspapers with these things in mind, then rather than being afraid, you'll be able to see that these things are signs of Christ's return. It's inevitably mean that Christ is just at the door, about to return. So while it might be that Christ could return absolutely at any moment, because these things are already happening, we've already got famines, we've already got peak oil, we've already got the financial systems crunching already in 2007 and 2008, so Christ could return absolutely at any moment. And that's the great beauty of understanding where these things are going and what's happening to the world, because it means you can just, you know that Christ is about to return. So these things need not faze us. However, at the same time, it might be that we may start to see more and more of these things starting to unfold. and starting to gain public consciousness. After all, the first three plagues of Egypt affected the Israelites too, before God made a distinction between the people of Egypt and the people of Israel. So if it happens that Christ doesn't quite return yet, and we are allowed to see some of these things unfolding more than they are doing, then that shouldn't be a problem for the faithful either. You know, we should be able to pull together as a community. We should together be able to look up and knowing that our redemption is drawing nigh. There is that verse in Isaiah 26 which I've got there. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be past. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. So it may well be that we have to see some of these things unfolding more than they are right now. And if that is the case, then we should still look up, as we know that our redemption draws nigh. But there is a possibility that if you're not aware of these things, and you don't look beyond what you're seeing in the newspapers, you don't join the dots and see that these things herald the return of Christ, that some people may well, you know, start to lose their faith. There's that in Peter's writings when it says, you know, where is the promise of his coming? If you're convinced that you won't see any of these things, you might be disturbed if you start to see them and Christ hasn't returned by then. So we have to be open to the possibility that these things might unfold further before Christ does return. But in any case, there's no reason why they have to unfold further. Christ is just at the door, just about to return. And whereas we might start to see some of them unfolding more, we should still be aware of the possibility that Christ will return absolutely at any moment, today, tomorrow, before we finish today, at any time. And these are all signs that are happening right now to show that Christ is at the very door. So let's just summarise those verses that we've read. Although for the world this will be a horrifying time, it really will be very scary seeing these things happen. You know, men's hearts failing for fear for what's inevitably going to happen on the earth. For us, it's a time to look up and to take stock, to realise that all of this is fulfilling Scripture. You know, 150 years ago, Christadelphians are writing and describing the very times that we were living in. Not because they were prophets or they'd seen visions, simply because they'd taken Scripture and read it and joined up the dots to see what the picture at the final end would be. So whereas at the start it might have looked like it was all, you know, modern newspapers, these things are all predicted beforehand. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh. We know that Christ is just at the door, just about to return, and he literally could return at any moment. There is nothing that needs to happen more for Christ to be here. But if more things do unfold, then that just means the return of Christ is even closer. And if we start to see some of these things happening, then we just have to work together and to get through these things and to enter into a closet and just shut the doors around us and just patiently wait for Christ to return. Be a wonderful thing to see these things happen, because they'll all herald the return of Christ.